Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back. We are going to get back into what we ended yesterday in talking about the Electoral College. But before we do, you know, I got to tell you, this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as 1798Part2.org. Getting a little ahead of myself because I'm in a hurry because there's a lot of stuff I want to get into with the Electoral College. And also RepublicReview.org. So I'll try to take my time so I don't rush through some of this stuff, but I want to make sure you completely understand because you need to get this so that you can start actually educating other people because most people see the problem with the election process with the president, but most of them have everything to do with the fact that we're not complying with the Constitution. And some of it is a huge paradigm shift regarding the Electoral College. But anyway, the number to call in is 215-867-8255 or 215-TOP-TALK. I will be getting into, it takes a little while to get through some of these issues, but I will be getting into Trump's campaign promises as we get ready to listen to the State of the Union in another couple of weeks. And I also, because I never got back to this, and I know several shows last year, I kept on saying, I'm going to get back to it, but I never did. And I know that. So I keep notes of what I don't get back to. And I want to get back to more details on the militia. One of the one things that was heavily discussed and contested was the militia process. Interestingly enough, some of the things that weren't contested or even talked about, because there was no such thing as a national bank or Federal Reserve. So those things weren't issues to be talked about because the banking was going to be left to the states. The federal government only had a responsibility of maintaining a currency, and the states actually had a little role in that too. But anyway, the whole point is that the militia, even though the banks weren't even mentioned, if you look through the ratification debates, it was a slam dunk. They didn't even talk about banking. Banking was a state's right. If you look at the militia, though, almost all of them got into details. They, you know, wanted to get into the nitinoids because they understood the importance of an armed public. And so we definitely want to get into that. So that's coming up. And I'm hoping to actually have some militia leaders that can come on and kind of talk more about the current militia and maybe even some historical context of the militia and so forth. And how we've gotten to a point in our society where federal dollars isn't going to a militia per the Constitution. We now have federal dollars arming and militarizing city law enforcement as well as sheriffs and so forth. And they're creating this level of corruption because these agencies and entities are becoming corrupt because they're becoming dependent. I got the wrong word in there. For emphasis effect, I tried to lower it a little bit. They're becoming dependent on all of the federal lucre that is coming in, and it's all unconstitutional. The only mechanism for the federal government for training military types of things is the militia. You got to understand, who is the president commander-in-chief of per the Constitution? The militia. Anyway, so though all of this stuff is really important and we want to get into the details of this, but we can only feed you so much. And the reason why we're going to kind of go through this a little bit slower this year is because we don't have a real big national pending election like we did last year. Last year, the election was very critical. And I'll tell you why it was so critical, because we lost key states such as Nevada and Arizona and almost Florida to voter fraud. And the Democrats have no compunction and they don't have any more. They are moral turpitude, or they have no moral values whatsoever. The ends justify the means. They will cheat, lie, and steal to literally take control and to force us down the path that they want to force us down. But let me move on. As you know, I've got a crowdfunding, and it's out with GoFundMe. We need your help. It's not just about educating you, and I'm hoping you find this show is more than just educational. I hope you find it insightful, because it's not about just teaching you the history. It's about showing you how that history can be used as literally a weapon and a shield, or our defense, in moving forward in taking back and restoring and reclaiming our republic. And so I would love to get your help. It would be a humble honor to be able to receive your support. And so if you go to the GoFundMe, and I'm not looking for, believe me, folks, I'm not asking for a penny to come into my personal accounts, because it won't happen. The only time a penny goes into my personal accounts is when I am getting reimbursed for expenditures on things that are associated to what we're doing. This is very important, my friends. The reason this is very important is due to the fact that I believe that in this effort, and I've talked about this before, but I think it's paramount to point this out at this point. I believe that this effort cannot be about self-service. If we're going to be successful, we have to set aside our self-interests, and we also have to set aside our differences. And regarding the money in this GoFundMe campaign, none of the money that I'm going to receive will be going into a salary for me or a salary within my organization. And so we will provide full disclosure. I will tell you that what we have and what we are doing is probably even going to be more efficient than even a nonprofit organization. Now, if you happen to have a company, but you want to support this, but you'd kind of like to have the write-off, there's no reason why you can't run advertisements on this show so that you can write off your advertisements, and actually some of that money would go to helping us, because now you're defraying some of my costs on this so that we actually have that money freed up to go into helping the agenda and so forth. So anyway, I would ask that you consider either directly contributing via the GoFundMe or just reach out to me. Either way, you can always reach out to me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. Okay? But if you want to just contribute some money via the GoFundMe, then again, I humbly accept your assistance, and I will prove worthy of that. And my organization, or all of those who are a part of this, it's not my organization, it is literally those of us who are joining in the fight, we humbly accept the assistance, and we will prove worthy of that. And so let me move on to the other things you can do. As you know, if you really want to get involved in your state, maybe it's your county or what have you, we just need to know what you want to do. More and more people are going to want to get involved. Just get ahead of this. Just send me an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org, and we will start helping you get set up so that you can use your computer, your phone. And, you know, it's not like we're looking to, you know, get 40 hours of work out of you. It doesn't take much time. I mean, maybe sometimes I sit down and it takes maybe 15, 20, 30 minutes. And some of it may be mind numbing in going through the spreadsheets or going through some data and just kind of organizing it just so it's usable data. Sometimes, as we pull it in off of the web, it's not as usable. So we kind of have to shape it a little bit. And it's little things like that. And then we actually have some really good tools. Once we've organized the data, then we can really start utilizing it and exploiting it. And so those are the types of things that I believe anybody can do. And I believe that you can even get involved in becoming a leader. If you want to be a leader, if you want to actually be a part of the reframing of our constitutional republic, then give us an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. There's another organization. As you know, I do this every 15 minutes or the very beginning of each show, but I want you to understand that the constitutionclub.ning.com, Keith Broders, an impeccable man, very smart man, understands the Constitution, and he is literally working and is the champion for rescinding the 17th Amendment. Join him. All he's asking, if you join him, is for you to start forwarding some emails. He's got the scripts. He's going to make it real easy for you. Folks, join this cause. What is it going to take for us to actually stand up and literally start asserting? And I'm not even asking you to make a fist to fight. All you've got to do is assert a little bit of energy. That's all you need to do. As Edmund Burke said, the only thing to stop evil from succeeding is for good men to stand up. Or in the reverse of that, which is what he really said, the only thing evil needs to succeed is for good men to do nothing. So you have your choice of how you want to state that. I would like to say that you're standing up instead of you doing nothing. So let me move forward. As you know, I want to thank you first for listening in and becoming a part of the solution, but I also want to let you know I've looked through the news. There is no news that the federal government is going to disband any of its tyrannical roles, responsibilities, and powers. And so with that, that means you and I have to do this. And that means that if you want to help, if you want to make what, you know, what Trump is providing us as a delay in the globalist agenda, then please join. Please get involved, because he can't be president for more than two terms. That means that it's inevitable that the deep state will get the reins back. And what they will do is we will pay. And we will pay a dear price. We'll lose our liberties and everything else. So you've got to get involved. We'll be right back. And I'm going to jump into the Electoral College, as we kind of left off yesterday. So please stay tuned. And we'll be right back after these promos. Thank you so much. Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And so before I really jump deep into what's going on, I think we have to really start off with, what is the Electoral College per the Constitution? Now, on Constitution Day, September 17th last year, and every Constitution Day in that week, I actually read the Constitution for you. I know a lot of people don't take the time, and it takes a couple of hours to read the Constitution, and I do some editorializing, so it takes a little longer, but I think it's important that we understand what the Constitution says so that we no longer have, you know, this misconceptions and go, oh, well, you know, that Electoral College sucks. We, you know, we shouldn't be doing that. No, let's actually understand what the Electoral College is and why we have that. So first off, you got to understand that we are a Republican form of government, which means that we elect representatives to represent us. So who do we elect? We elect only those to represent us. In other words, direct elections and a democracy is not what we do. What that means is that we do not have a voice in voting for whether we have health care or not. That would be our representatives. We expect our representatives, per the Constitution, per the state constitution, to comply to the Constitution. In other words, they can only govern us based on the powers that we delegate them, which means, and this is the huge, this is the beauty of our system, that our politicians are not able to just do something that is not within the Constitution. So the question is, if healthcare is not within the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, or your state constitution, then you have your representatives who are violating your constitution and your rights and privileges as a sovereign. You only delegate to them very specific powers to make them sovereign over you on those particular powers and issues. So that is why we have direct representation and we directly vote for who our representative is. The Senate was never to represent the people. The Senate is still, per the Constitution, supposed to represent the states. So that's why we only, per the Constitution until the 17th Amendment, only elected our direct representatives. When it came to the executive, the executive is not a direct representative of the people. The people don't have a right to petition the executive. We have a right to petition our government, which is our representatives. So what that means is that we should not be directly popular vote electing for our president. What we popular vote for is the Electoral College. And you'll understand here that we only elect electors. Nowhere in here are we supposed to be voting for a president where we vote for a very particular person. We vote for electors and electors only. So let's go through the Constitution, Article 2, Section 2, which is what really defines the Electoral College. And it says, each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature may direct a number of electors equal to the whole number of senators and representatives to which the state may be entitled in Congress, but no senator or representative or person holding an office of trust or profit under the United States shall be appointed as an elector. So there you go. That is, you know, how we get electors. Electors are based on how many congressional representatives we have. That's both representatives and senators. And by the way, they cannot be an elector themselves, which in other words, they can't be able to go in because there may be a senator who might be running for president. It keeps them from voting for themselves. It forces the fact that they identify. And so again, I'm going to read this very first part. Because this has not been changed by the 12th Amendment. Each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature may direct a number of electors equal to the whole number. So what they're supposed to do is the legislatures are supposed to appoint who the electors are going to be that we will vote for. In other words, they're supposed to actually appoint a body of people that would be who we would be voting for, and then these people would be voting for the president. So the whole point of selecting electors now is where Article 2, Section 2 changes, and the 12th Amendment changes as well. And so it moves on and says, the electors shall meet in their respective states and vote by ballot for two persons of whom one at least shall be an inhabitant of the same state. Oh, I shall not be an inhabitant of the same state. In other words, if you have an elector, each elector, all of our electors have to vote, and they cannot vote for two people within the same state. So nowhere in here is there a primary, nowhere in here is there a party, or nowhere in here is there a mention of people running campaigns or anything like that. That's not in here yet, right? So anyway, let me reread this. The electors shall meet in their respective states and vote by ballot for two persons of whom one at least shall not be an inhabitant of the same state with themselves. And they shall make a list of all the persons voted for each, which list they shall sign and certify and transmit sealed to the seat of government of the United States, directed to the President of the Senate. The President of the Senate shall, in the presence of the Senate and House of Representatives, open all the certificates, and the vote shall be then counted. The person having the greatest number of votes shall be the President, if such number be a majority of the whole number of electors appointed, and if there be more than one who have such majority and have an equal number of votes, then the House of Representatives shall immediately choose by ballot one of them for president, and if no person have a majority, then from the five highest on the list, the said House shall in like manner choose the president, but in choosing the president, the vote shall be taken by the states, the representation from each state having one vote, a quorum for this purpose shall consist of a member or members from 2/3 of the states and a majority. I kind of lost my place here. I apologize. I just had to shift this. I apologize. Representatives shall immediately choose by ballot one of them, and if no person have a majority from them, the five highest on the list of the said House shall in like manner choose the president. But in choosing the president, the vote shall be taken by states, the representation from each state having one vote. A quorum for this purpose shall consist of member or members of 2/3 of the states, and a majority of all the states shall be necessary to a choice. In every case, after the choice of the president, the person having the greatest number of votes of the electors shall be the vice president. Oh, so in other words, they were basically whoever won the beauty contest won. And if there was a tie, then they kind of broke it down into another process. All of this part here had changed, and it went into the change of the 12th Amendment. The 12th Amendment, because this whole process, because of these ties and everything else, created a quagmire in the 1800 election, which basically drove the change of the 12th Amendment. And that was because Jefferson unseated Adams, and people go, you know what, we don't want to go through over 60 counts of votes. I think it was like 80 some odd. But regardless of how many times, it was such a laborious process in selecting Jefferson as the president, they said, we got to fix this. And so this is what they did. This is the 12th Amendment, and it was passed in December 9th, 1803, and ratified by the states. By the last state in ratifying, it was July 27th on 1804. So it took about a year and a half to ratify. The electors shall meet in their respective states and vote by ballot. So in other words, there's no difference in the appointing. In other words, the parties don't appoint, and the party, because currently what happens is the parties elect and the parties appoint who's going to be their electors if their guy wins. There's nowhere in here where we mention party. but I will prove that as we move forward. The electors shall meet in their representatives in their respective state. And the reason I say that there is no party involvement is because the very beginning of Section 2 that I read earlier, where the legislators who they appoint the pool of who the electors will be, and then each congressional district chooses who theirs is going to be. So the pool has to come out of the representations, because it obviously you have to have residency or what have you within your congressional district for that person to be elected. But anyway, it is all appointment, though. The electors are appointed by the legislators. And so let me move on. The electors shall meet in their respective states and vote by ballot for president and vice president. And oops, I'm going to have to repeat this. So this is really important. We have to understand what we're supposed to be doing so that we can look at what we're doing and go, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? How did we get caught up in this quagmire? And it'll all be pointing the fingers at politicians as well as the party. So please stay tuned and we'll be right back. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
And so let me go back and point this out, because I want you to understand that if Congress has an enumerated power such as the regulating of the militia, then they have the ability to create laws, regulations, statutes, or what have you in regulating the militia. So the ability to use regulations and statutes apply to enumerated powers. The Electoral College and the selection of president is not an enumerated power. It is a defined process within the contract that this is how you do this. So any deviation to this process is a violation, because you have to actually change the contract if you want to change this process. To be clear, this does not fall under an enumerated power. This is a defined, I mean, it's just like establishing the fact that we have a president, that we have senators, that the senators are based on two per state. How come we don't have three now? How come the Senate hasn't created a statute and or a regulation to give themselves a third senator? because it is a definition and a defined process within the Constitution. So you have to understand that this is sacred. These are things that cannot change. The apportionment of congressmen, or I should say representatives, in the Constitution is based on 30,000 heads. There has not been any regulation and or statute. They do have a little wiggle room, but they just can't cap themselves and actually say that's it. And that's one of the reasons why the First Amendment and the folks who are supporting that are out there trying to help ratify that so that we can get back to a true representative government. So your representative has a good chance of knowing you by name and face instead of you being just a number to them. And so let me get back into the 12th Amendment. The electors shall meet in their respective states and vote by ballot for president and vice president, one of whom at least shall not be an inhabitant of the same state with themselves. They shall name in their ballots the persons voted for as president and in distinct ballots the person voted for as vice president. I'm going to stop right here. There is no such thing within the Constitution as, what do you call that, when the president and the vice president join their running mates. There's no such thing as the president being able to choose who his running mate is going to be. The electors clearly choose that because there is not another amendment in the Constitution that says that presidents can select who they want as a vice president to help them with their campaign. That has been all done as an appeasement to the party so that they can have an agenda rammed down our throats. And the politicians appeased the party by violating the Constitution. So, anyway, ballots, we just talked about, and in distinct ballots, the persons voted for as vice president, and the number of votes for each, which lists they shall sign and certify and transmit sealed to the seat of government of the United States, directed to the president of the Senate. The president of the Senate shall, in the presence of the Senate and the House of Representatives, open all the certificates and the votes. So pretty much there's not much change to the Section 2 in regards to this. And it goes on and says, open all the certificates and the votes shall then be counted. The person having the greatest number of votes for president shall be the president. And these are people, again, who are electing the president, who are electors. They are not a popular vote. If such a number of a majority of the whole number of electors appointed, and if no persons have such a majority, then from the persons having the highest numbers, not exceeding 3 on the list of those voted for as president, the House of Representatives shall choose immediately by ballot the president. Do you understand? In other words, if you have 20 candidates, and out of the 20 candidates, not one of those 20 candidates had obtained a level of 50% or greater. You have to have a majority. So had we had the entire field of Republicans and the entire field of Democrats for president and or vice president, because remember, out of this entire field that we had in 2016, then, you know, the electors would have voted, and how they voted, if not one would have been a majority, in other words, nobody got greater than 50%, then it would go to the House of Representatives, and the House of Representatives, out of the top 3, would choose the president. The votes shall be taken by the states, the representation from each state having one vote. A quorum for this purpose shall consist a member or members from 2/3 of the states, and a majority of all of the states shall be necessary to a choice. And if the House of Representatives shall not choose a president, whether the right of choice shall devolve upon them before the fourth day of March next following, then the vice president shall act as president, as in the case of the death of other constitutional disability of the president. Moving on, there's a little bit of emphasis with italics. And then the third part is that the person having the greatest number of votes as vice president shall be the vice president if such numbers be a majority of the whole number of electors appointed. And if no person have a majority, then the two highest numbers on the list, the Senate shall choose the vice president. A quorum for the purpose shall consist of two-thirds of the whole number of senators, and a majority of the whole number shall be necessary by a choice. But no person constitutionally ineligible to the office of president shall be eligible to that of vice president of the United States. In other words, you have to be, in both cases, you have to be eligible for the position. In other words, a vice president cannot be somebody that is not eligible for, in other words, they have to be a U.S. citizen. And so here's an interesting thing, because if we look at the eligibility, and I'm not going to get into it this time, but if we look at the eligibility, that's all, that starts raising some eyebrows. So bottom line is, what we need to do is we need to understand the fact that there's no such thing as a party. There's no such thing as primaries. There is no such thing as the direct election. Our state legislators are the ones who are supposed to provide a pool for us to vote for in the presidential election of who the electors would be. And so for each congressional district, I believe it would be political suicide for all of the legislators to, you know, if you have a party control, like you have a blue state and you have a congressional district that is a solid red congressional district, like the one I live in, and I live in a blue state, it would be political suicide for the blue legislators to only provide Democratic electors in, they would be Democratic operatives in choosing the electors. And so that's, the party has become so powerful that they've gone down this path of doing this. And that is one of the reasons why, you know, I believe that the states would probably come up with a, if you want to call it a fair or a balanced approach to ensure that if it is a red district, that those, the representatives of that district, the state legislators, because you got to understand there's more state legislators that are a part of that congressional district than just one or two. And I don't know in my particular circumstances how many that is, but I can tell you it's more than four. It's probably in the numbers of maybe 20, 15 or 20. Anyway, the state should probably break it down so that the presiding legislators in that congressional district, those who were seated in the legislature in that congressional district, would be the ones who would nominate those people for electors, and then the state then out of that pool of nominations, the state legislators would then vote who they would consider to be the best electors. You got to understand, who is an elector? An elector is usually a very, very smart, politically savvy person who understands the magnitude and ramifications of the Constitution and the office itself. This is how the Electoral College is supposed to function. There is no mention of party. We have become so bipolar on party that I think that people will have a problem in accepting this constitutional process, but it is what it is. We can't reject it, and we've been rejecting it, and we've allowed the party to create the problem for us. Again, did you hear any mention of a primary? Did you hear any mention of running mates? No. Okay, so when we come back, because I've just hit another break, When we come back, there's an article I want to read regarding one of the sides and one of the arguments of getting rid of and abolishing the Electoral College. So when we come back, I want to talk about, again, the importance of the Electoral College, and we'll get into this article. And so we'll be right back after a couple of promos. Thank you so much. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I'm trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so let me get back to the fundamentals here. Again, the President of the United States is not a direct representative. His job, role, responsibility, and power, and his primary focus is to faithfully execute the laws of the land and ensure that the Constitution is being abided by the legislators. This is how the parties have taken control and have created the deep state. And because if you understand, they moved away from following the Electoral College back in the 1860s. Yeah, that's right. That's when the parties started colluding in creating the deep state. That's what, you know, right about that time is when they started doing all sorts of nefarious things, and history proves it. The corporation, the establishment of unconstitutional corporations for the government and so forth, there are all sorts of things that show and expose, you know, how the deep state was created deeply within our government at that point in time. Not that they weren't operatives and so forth already, like John Marshall and Hamilton and so forth. That being said, the whole concept of having a direct or a popular election, we do not have a king, we do not have, and that was the whole intent. It was never a, the White House may be, you know, in some paradigm, the House of the People. It was not. I mean, it is the government of the people, not just a house of the people. Washington never considered himself the president of the people. He was the president of a republic. And so we need to really start, you know, putting our arms around this. But let's get into the paradigm and, or I should say, the argument for the popular vote. Because when you start listening and understanding, there was an article written in the Intelligencer, and I think it was the Intelligencer in Connecticut, and this article was written by Benjamin Hart. I'm going to read his article for you so that you understand what he's talking about, because he's clearly a very biased journalist who is wanting to, you know, poke the finger in the eye of our Republican form of government. And he wants to really, obviously, he is a proponent for direct elections and democracy, which would then move us very quickly into communism. On Saturday, May 5th, 2018, Connecticut's General Assembly approved a bill that would make the state the 11th to adopt the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. Now, this right here, I'm stopping here, I'm editorializing, so this may take me a whole show to get through this article. But I want you to understand that per Article 1, Section, per Article 1, and you know what, I'm going to actually go to it because I want to be, you know, it's really important that we're concise here, right? And I want to say that Article 1, Section 10 is the provisions against the states. Yes, state prohibition. So Article 1, Section 10, Subsection 1, no state shall enter into a treaty, alliance, or confederation, which means the same, the treaty, compact. What he's just said here is on Saturday, May 10th, 2018, Connecticut's General Assembly approved a bill that would make the state the 11th to adopt the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. This compact is unconstitutional. The states are not allowed to enter into compacts. Clearly, right there in the Constitution, they're violating. All 11 states are violating the Constitution, which would require the Supreme Court and Congress to literally rain upon these states for violating the Constitution. They have no business creating compacts. So anyway, and the first since 2016 election for a new state to join. So in other words, they've only got 11 states, and they're hoping that other states will join. But I'll continue reading. Once enough, other states has signed on, the bill would bind a state's electoral college votes, 7 in Connecticut's case, to the candidate who wins the most raw votes in the presidential election. Governor Daniel Malloy is expected to sign the bill. So what they're actually talking about doing is they're actually talking about violating both Article 2, Section 2, as well as the 12th Amendment. There are states that are right now advocating an absolute disregard for the Constitution, and the fact that they're creating a compact is a blatant disregard as well. It's another small step on the way to what advocates will hope will turn into a major election reform. In other words, they're trying to change the sentiments of the people instead of following the constitutional process, which is the Article 5 process, in making changes to what our processes are. The Electoral College is one of the most features of American democracy, a vestigial, which in all honesty is, you know, a $20 word that I read people that use these types of words like this, and he's basically saying is an imperceptible, you know, type of thing within our political system. And he moves on and says it bestows disproportionate power to rural America. Are you in these red states? Are you understanding what's going on in the attack of rural America? You better get this, and you better start waking up. And also, like so much of our political system, it has taken on a deeply partisan cast. What he is literally advocating here, what Ben is advocating here in his article, is he's advocating greater partisanship. If we actually followed the 12th Amendment, there is no partisanship. I mean, it goes back to the state legislators in selecting. It's not about party selecting. And like I said, the states should, it would be in their best interest to ensure that the congressional districts are, you know, the pool is created by those legislators within those congressional districts. And if you, you know, kind of understand, then you'll start understanding that the people, when they are electing these folks, they will have far less injury and far less disdain for who they have to elect, because if you have a dark blue state or if you have a purple state and you're finding that the state legislators are literally only selecting the pool of communists and that is it, then, you know, all is lost within that state anyway. But bottom line is that they're neat because the electors need to be a representative of the people of that congressional district. And so that's why I say it's political suicide, because when you do that, then you actually start, you know, exposing yourself, and then and it actually may get the sentiments to start changing. Hopefully it would. But I'm going to tell you, if you understand the communist ideology, the ends justify the means, and they march forward very quickly in supporting what they need to do. So anyway, what he was saying, it bestows a disproportionate power to rural America. And also, like much of our political system, it has taken a deeply partisan cast. Democrats increasingly clustered together in cities have particular reason to loathe the Electoral College of late. It has helped crown two popular vote losers, George W. Bush and Donald Trump, in the 21st century Republicans, losers of six of the last seven popular votes, are more than happy to keep things as they are. You know, it's interesting how they identify popular vote losers, but actually, Bill Clinton was not a popular vote winner. And as a matter of fact, had we followed the Constitution, Bill Clinton would not have been elected. And that's because he didn't make it to the 50% margin, if you understand what I'm saying. You have to have at least a majority of the votes in those states. And so I truly believe if we were following the Constitution, we would have been saved these agendas from actually being rammed down our throat. And so moving on, let me just continue to say this. This is what the article goes on. Ben continues to say, let me say that. For years, Democratic efforts to reform this manifestly undemocratic set of rules amounted to little more than grumbles. Well, here he's calling this undemocratic set of rules. Well, we're a Republican form of government, Ben. You got to wake up and understand that we're out to protect the minority. We're not out to allow the majority mob rule to destroy us. That was one of the brilliant, genius designs of our system. Killing the Electoral College by conventional means would involve passing a nationwide constitutional amendment or convening a constitutional convention, both close to impossible tasks. In other words, they're recognizing that going through the amendment process or the convention, unfortunately, Ben doesn't understand Republic Review, because if we get back and it just takes one state, let Wyoming be the state that starts complying, and let Wyoming and the few other states that start joining start recognizing. And instead of allowing primaries to happen, that they vote for electors and that the electors will actually vote for. And as a matter of fact, you got to remember that they don't have to have the election happen on a very particular day. The electors can vote for president at any point in time, as long as it's done before March, per the Constitution, right? So clever reformists came up with the alternate route, violating the Constitution, passing state laws that would take effect only when it is guaranteed that enough other states have signed on to swing the outcome. The magic number is 270 electoral votes. In other words, they want a majority of states, not a two-thirds or anything like that. With that, as you can tell, I'm out of time. God bless, my friends. I will be back, and we're going to finish this dialogue tomorrow and hopefully get it all done tomorrow. I'll be right back tomorrow. Thank you so much.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm
regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.